in the movie that came out last fall called Bridge of Spies. It tells the story of a guy by the name of James Donovan, who was an attorney. And in the 50s, he was the attorney that was after they'd gone through a lot of other attorneys, had agreed that he would defend a Soviet spy by the name of Rudolf Abel, who was picked up in New York City after almost 10 years of spying for the KGB. And in the movie and in real life, he begrudgingly took it, but he felt like there needed to be a real defense, a prudent defense, that even a Soviet spy would deserve to at least have a fair day in court. And so in the story we see and in the history we know that in the midst of the time and the scare of the 50s and early 60s, when the voices were all saying one thing, he was standing in that flow, he was standing in that stream, and he was facing it down and saying, no, this man needs a fair trial. He needs fair hearing. And when the voices were saying that it was time for him to be executed, he said, no, life in prison will do. And he even had the courage to say in the movie, he says it in the judge's chambers, but in real life, he said it in court during the sentencing phase. And he said, we don't want to put him to death because if we do, what happens when one of our spies is captured? And we could trade him. And in the movie, it's a great movie, not only sharing the story, but also it's a movie that in it we see that struggle of one who stands in the current going one way and trying to go the other, who was acting in such a way different than all the others around him wanted him to be. It was a man of courage. And in many ways, he lived upside down in those moments. And he saw things differently. We're in our third week of our series called Upside Down. As we look at the Sermon on the Mount and the teachings of Jesus, where he's challenging the people that you've heard, you are living this way, but now I am calling you to live that way, in a new way. And last week, Pastor Doug talked about salt and light, talked about the salt that preserves, that changes, that transforms, that creates traction for people. But as we turn to the passage today, we get into Jesus unpacking really what it means to be salt and light. And the two we read today are two of the like six examples that Jesus uses. Now let me say that as Jesus is doing this, he's employing something called hyperbole. That is that he's exaggerating his statement in order to prove a point. Exaggerating, he's not meaning literally cut off your hand or take out your eye. But he's exaggerating the point so we get the point and the transformation that he's making. He begins with, in each section, using a pretty clever way to convince people. And in this, he begins by saying, you have heard it said, dot, dot, dot. But I'm here to tell you something else. It works well. Like, for example, I could say, you have heard it said that it's okay to drive 5 miles an hour over the speed limit. But I'm here to tell you it's still speeding. That kind of hit close to home, right? I've ridden with some of you, I know. Some of you have passed me on Central or Talmadge. it's okay. I was 4 miles an hour over. You've heard it said that when there's no one around, you can just roll through a stop sign as long as you look. Or if you're in the rural parts of the world like I grew up, and it's at night, as long as you flash your headlights. Don't do that, by the way. But I say, it says stop for a reason. Or for our younger generation or for others, you have heard it said that it's okay to borrow someone else's Netflix account for years. But I say that's against the agreement. See, it's kind of significant, isn't it? It works. And Jesus knew that. And so he then goes through these examples. You've heard it said, don't murder. A pretty common, if not mostly unanimous opinion. But I say, if you're angry or you call someone a fool, you're just as guilty. Why, that's crazy. You know how many people of us are, that we're guilty of killing just driving to work, if that's the standard? But what Jesus is doing in this one, in the next one, in the next one, is that Jesus is saying that it's not about our outer actions only, but it's also about our inner life. He's saying if we live our lives gripped in the grasp of anger, if we're constantly angry at people or situations, if anger continues to grip us, that it's not good for us, that it matters to God. And for that matter, it's not even good for our health. That when we find ourselves churning with anger and lust or lack of forgiveness or broken relationships, and when we have those things churning around inside of us, it eats us alive. And it causes problems in our health. It causes problems in our lives. Even if we wake up in the morning and we get ourselves nice and cleaned up and we comb our hair just right and we put on those nice clothes and we go to work and we hold it all together on the outside, what Jesus is saying is that churning mess inside of us matters to God. It matters to our health and to our life. And so God calls us, Jesus is calling us to a higher standard, to be mindful of that which is eating us up on the inside, which is tearing us apart, and live to a higher standard, to live with grace and forgiveness, respect, and to desire wholeness in all of our relationships. Grace and forgiveness, respect for others, and a desire for wholeness in our relationships. You know, if you live with grace and forgiveness, you're sort of countercultural. When you live in a way that respects other people, when you live in a way that seeks and desires wholeness in relationships, that's countercultural in our world today. In our world today where the loudest voice in the room gets all the attention, as I'm the loudest voice right now, I suppose. But in a world as well where relationships seem disposable, what Jesus is calling us to is to be mindful of those things, to live with grace, to live with forgiveness, to seek wholeness in life. When I was growing up, when I was very young, I remember, I don't know when this started, it was way before me. Every time I would leave the house, beginning early in elementary school, before I even knew what it was about, I would be leaving in the morning for school, or I'd be going to a friend's house, and my mom would always say the very last thing out the door, "Remember, you're a Luke." Now, I was the youngest of five. In a relatively smaller town, we knew a lot of people. And I remember hearing it, and I'd always be like, "That's kind of strange." My friends would think, "That's weird. Don't you know your name? It's on your lunch box. It's on your school box. It's on the back of your soccer shirt. Remember, you're a Luke." But as I grew up, what I realized was that my mom and my dad were trying to instill in us that when we would go out and we were with friends or we were at school, that to give just a little more thought, that I wasn't there alone, and that I represented something bigger. Now, there was a time, I would say, I sort of rebelled against this. I saw it as some legalistic tenet. My dad used to say, we'd say, "Well, Dad, why did you tell us that?" And he'd say, "Well, because, you know, people will do all kinds of things. But think before you do." But it could have been very legalistic. And there was a time when I thought it was. But what I realized, it was about having a higher standard. To not settle for the mediocrity, to not settle for the norm, but instead be willing and able to step up to something bigger. To step up to something greater. And that's what Jesus is doing in this place and in this moment. He's calling the people of God, his followers, us, those who call themselves Christians today, to live with grace and forgiveness, respect, and a desire for wholeness in the relationships. But when he's doing that, he's not doing it legalistically, because if it was legalistically, guess what? We can point to all the other messy ones that are to come, but let's hang around this anger one. Is there anybody here who has never been angry at anybody or called them a fool? No. Because none of us can measure up to this highest of standards. But what we are called to do is to strive in our inner life, in our inner being, to allow God's grace and God's mercy to continue to work in us, to be aware of the thoughts that go through our head, to be aware of the attitudes, to be aware of the words that cross our tongue, to live to a higher standard. Not in some legalistic way, but in a way that frees our heart, that lightens the load off of our shoulders, that gets rid of some of that mess or all of that mess that exists inside of us at times. Those things that fill our head when we lay down at night or we find ourselves alone in the car. Of the worry and the anxiety and the anger and the bitterness and the lust and all those things that fill us. But you know what? If it was just a matter of doing it, so be it. But that's where the Spirit of God comes to work. That the Spirit of God continues to mold us and make us. You know the image that they use in the scriptures about the potter and the clay? And how that clay has to be soft and pliable, that it can be shaped and molded. There's another image in Romans 12:2, where Paul says this, "Don't be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you can figure out what God's will is, what is good and pleasing and mature." Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, the renewing of your heart, to seek that which Christ has called us to, of healthy relationships, of healthy lives, of care for others, forgiveness and grace and mercy. Instead of being ruled by whatever comes through our minds or is in the world around us, live with grace and forgiveness and respect. If you do that, it's very countercultural. That's not something that's really championed today. But that's a higher standard that God has called us to live upside down, to live opposite from what often is the case in the world around us. A higher standard that God has called you to. Amen.